You're listening to Siren Radio, and it's time for another edition of Cultural Connections. And in the academic season finale for Cultural Connections, we welcome three fantastic individuals, all of whom have got, well, connotations of spiritual aspects as well, which we'll discuss as the programme proceeds. We've got a lay Hindu chaplain, Nina Chapman. We've got a lay Catholic chaplain, Helen Townsend. And we've got our Orthodox human being with all sorts of spiritual connections as well. That's Carl Christopher. And as mentioned, the theme for Cultural Connections is clearly going to have an element of the spiritual with respect to that side of things. So let's turn to Nina first, if we may. Nina, would you like to share with us, and the listener, of course, how you become lay Hindu chaplain for the University of Lincoln, and what does it actually entail?
That's a very big question. I come from a priest family, and my grandfather used to own a temple in India, and from there on my father, but he who was a civil servant, so we moved to Africa, and then from there we didn't have a temple there, so they created one, and I was involved as a child in all that. So it's always been one of my main things was this. I used to call it direct line to God, basically, because I could sit there and talk hours. So eventually I followed the Hindu religion and learned from the priests there. And in Africa, once you've done some parts of it, they sort of give you a theory test kind of thing, so you know. And then it's a bit like when people baptize in other, faiths. So we are then given a special thread, and we are given a spot to put on the head to say, right, I now pronounce you as the Hindu chaplain. Mm. So you start practicing, you join in with whatever they do. So when I came here, that wasn't available to me as such, because we had very few temples in those days. So I ended up becoming a financial controller for London Board of Healing, and 30 years of service, and then I retired recently. I came to Lincoln because one of my kids was here and wasn't coming back home, so I decided to move. And then met Subhash at one of the university's functions because my daughter came here. And from there, I started talking to him and found out that he's, doing this chaplaincy work for the university. And he told me a little story about how he had to fight to get this and keep the job here kind of thing, and his beliefs. And I thought that's a good point to start. So I asked him whether there would be a chance for any other chaplains to be recruited or whatever. So he said, come and have a chat with me. And I had a chat about 2 years ago, and then left it at that. Then suddenly last year again, he approached me to say this, would you like to come and work with him there? So I thought, hey, I've retired, I'm getting bored, let's just get on with it.
And here you
it.
Are, exactly.
And so joined last end of July, and I'm here.
And lo and behold, there we are, time moves on. Yeah. Okay, let's move straight to Helen. Not same question, we'll come to that later. But your first choice of music, which is very much in keeping with the notion of communication and indeed connection. Aretha Franklin, I Say a Little Prayer. Why have you gone for this as your first choice of music?
Well, it's a great piece of music, and I love this period of music as well, and some fantastic women singers around this time. But also it's about connecting with people, and it's about caring about other people in a very casual, low-key, everyday sort of way, and I really appreciate that.
Forever, you stay in my heart, and I will love you forever.
Forever,
So from the Christian perspective, we've just moved out of the season of Easter, at least from the kind of Catholic perspective. But when it comes to Orthodox, I'm not sure, because, of course, the Orthodox Easter was a week or so after the West. It's all very confusing, or can be in certain ways, down to lunar phases. But let's turn straight away to Carl Christopher, as we defined lay chaplain for the Orthodox. Yep. Now, as I say, moved into different areas and so on. Share with us that notion of the Orthodoxy, which ultimately you'd say, well, if St. Paul had stayed in one way and Peter had stayed in the other way, we might not have had that sort of split in the first place.
Well, that's a massive question. And I don't know. I don't know if it's a question of, say, Peter and Paul and their split or not, because in our icons, and I'm sure it's the same for our Catholic brothers and sisters, in our icons where St. Peter and Paul always come together, they're usually embracing, number one, and also holding a picture of a temple, a church building. And the idea is the unity is there, even when people fall out. So rather than focus on any potential causes of schism, I think it's a great seasonal time, as you mentioned, to look forward to June the 29th, which for both us and the Catholics is indeed St. Peter, St. Paul's joint feast. That's how I like to think of it.
Yeah. Okay, let's turn again to Nina, if we may, because, forgive me, we've also had the season of light, which is also, I mean, you have this wonderful coalescence of, I mean, Hindi, is that also something where we talk about Easter time from that point of view, but the similar celebration in Hindu would be?
Diwali,
exactly, which is anyways Feast of Light, is it not?
It's a festival of lights,
exactly, which again kind of echoes. And this is one of the things I want to perhaps tease out here: some of the similarities between the religions, some of the notions that an awful lot of people, and I can guarantee a lot of students I speak to, say, "What are you doing religion for? That's caused so many wars, so much bloodshed, so much irritation with respect to that." Actually, on a fundamental level, surely there's much more in terms of commonalities, in terms of the human experience, than maybe we actually originally acknowledge.
Yeah, I agree, because there are a lot of similarities. Diwali is basically a festival of lights. Hmm. It's a victory of good over evil, and it just makes everybody happy, and families get together. So most of the religions, if you look at that, the things they preach are similar.
We surely, if we turn to Helen, that is the essence of the Christian message: resurrection, literally the victory of life after death, shall we say, over death and so on, and that celebration, really, that what we share in this crazy world that we call the cosmos, etc., is just vital to be celebrated, presumably.
I think so, and because the fundamental reality is love, and every religion cares about love, and it's how you express it and share it that's, you know, really important in this world.
And we are living in the Carolian Age, of course. Previous incumbents of the Crown of England, who were called Charles, had lots of challenges when it came to religious, in particular, for all sorts of reasons, which we won't go into. The coronation, though, King Charles was very keen on actually ensuring that there was an inclusivity about that. Now, you may have very strong views about the monarchy. You might decide we should be a republic. I don't know. I mean, you share that with that body. But looking back over it now, do you feel that actually the right tone was set, or was it a case of, well, no, what about the Jedi religion? No sign of them. Where was Obi-Wan Kenobi?
I actually thought that there was a huge amount of thought and preparation put into this over a long period of time, and I was impressed by the amount of inclusivity that there was. And, you know, as Catholics, we were very grateful to be included. At the previous coronation, our representative had to stand outside the doors of the Abbey.
You can't do that with Cardinal Nichols. I mean, Vincent Nichols has to come in.
He was very much part of the service and part of the blessing of the new monarch. So we were enormously honoured by that. Mm. And I think there were a lot of people who felt drawn in and included, which is a wonderful and very thoughtful approach.
Carl. Similar question. The Orthodox faith, again, something which is key to that side of things. Did you feel, I mean, did you watch the coronation? Was it something which you thought, fine, or was it a case of, no, it's a bank holiday, I'll do something completely different?
I have to confess live on air that no, I thought it was a bank holiday, not something different. And I'm interested and broadly supportive. It's not, it wasn't a political statement. Mm. I've just got lots of small children and it was a sunny day. And yeah, the choice to sit in front of the screen wasn't
perfectly,
really,
perfectly yeah. understandable. Nina.
To me, I've loved the royal family. To me, this being part of that day, the coronation, I felt privileged. I felt this is a lifetime event for me and for my children, who may not see. I mean, if Charles decides to live as long as our beloved Queen, who knows? Yeah. So to me, I felt really happy. My village was decorated. I was part of organizing stuff like the lunch. We had the whole village had the lunch together. It was like a holiday camp. It was so beautiful. Mm. I love my village anyway. Mm. To me, coronation has brought people together. I mean, you had to just look at the news and see every faith, every community part of it. They were all there, whether you're black, white, or whatever. Mm. Everyone was enjoying. I know there were some odd incidents of egg throwing and whatever, but then always happens when you're famous, something like that comes out anyway. Mm. So to me, it was a very, very special day. I'm so glad I was actually part of it. I was in my village, and I went there the day before to, you know, see the atmosphere, feel the atmosphere. But I came back to because I had the stuff for the village to. I loved it. I'm so glad it happened. So.
It'll move us on, of course, to the sacred and the secular. But whilst we're talking about that wonderment, that indefinable aspect about life and the creation, whatever your viewpoint perspective happens to be, I often feel a little bit sorry for the likes of Richard Dawkins, who talks about the selfish gene and says it's all very programmed, etc. Well, it may well be, but I don't know. I sort of have a sense that there's even more when you actually look at a blade of grass and you see the magnificence of this. This is a cue to obviously take us to your next choice, your first choice of music, Carl, of course, From a Blade of Grass to Where the Green Grass Grows. Would you like to explain why?
Yes. I mean, there is part of the reason is because of the content. The song is yearning for a simple country life, especially contrasted to the city. But personally as well, I was introduced to this song by when I was a late teenager, 17, 18, I worked as a landscape gardener, as a labourer for a landscape gardener from Canada. And this guy still means so much to me. Big shout out to Andy Bretherick, if you're listening. He taught me so much about the faith. He taught me so much about what it means to be a man as well. I really love Andy. But one of the things that shocked me when I asked him what kind of music do you like, when he said country music, I started laughing, because everyone knows that country music is rubbish. That's how I would say it for the part of the world that I'm from. And he turned around to me in all seriousness and said, "Why are you saying that? Where are you getting this from? Have you listened to any country music?" And I realised at that moment I was just repeating stuff that I'd heard off Radio 1 or stuff that I'd heard my friend saying. And he lent me a CD with this artist, Tim McGraw. And this particular song is by no means my favourite or the best, but it just sums up so well how wrong you can be and how easily epistemological foundations remain unchallenged. We just think that we know what we know.
Marching into the night, they disappear to the left and right again. Another supper from a sack, a 99-cent heart attack. I got a pounding head and an aching back, and the camel's buried in a big straw stack. I'm gonna live where the green grass grows, watching my corn pop up in rows. Every night be tucked in close to you. Raise up kids where the good Lord's blessed. Point our rocking chairs towards the west. And plant our dreams where the peaceful river flows. Where the green grass grows. Well, I'm from a map dot, a stop sign on a blacktop. caught the first bus I could hop from there. But all of this glitter is getting dark. There's concrete growing in the city park. I don't know who my neighbors are. There's bars on the corners and bars on my heart. But I'm gonna live where the green grass grows. Watch my corn pop up in rows. Every night be tucked in close to you. Raise our kids where the good Lord's blessed. Point our rocking chairs towards the west. Plant our dreams where the peaceful river flows. Where the green grass grows. I'm gonna live where the green grass grows. Watch my corn pop up in rows. Every night be tucked in close to you. Raise our kids where the good Lord's blessed. Point our rocking chairs towards the west. And plant our dreams where the peaceful river flows. Whoa, where the green grass grows.
You're listening to Cultural Connections on Siren Radio, and we have three fabulous individuals, all with a spiritual edge, Nina Chapman, Carl Christopher, and Helen Townsend. Let's move into the first major discussion point, which is, of course, the sacred and the secular. Let's turn to Helen first. Helen, in a world which consistently seems to be based in the secular, we see this on a regular basis. You just have to access your local environment, social media, online stuff, etc. There is this sense that actually it's all about this. I mean, even we see things like mindfulness, which is a wonderful activity and great that we engage with that. But surely that's part of the binding together of religion, that mindfulness was part of religion from its initial inceptions, both Old Testament, New Testament, whichever your line is, the time to reflect on the whole process. From your own perspective as the lay Catholic chaplain at the University of Lincoln, do you have any senses that we are shifting our mindset as a case of, well, the horse has already bolted, we are heading towards a secular world, we're in a secular world?
I think that people will always have a need to understand what their life's about and have a reason to be alive and to find meaning in their existence. And that's a fundamental human need in order to get through life and get through all its difficulties. And all of our religions in our multi-faith chaplaincy speak to the need for meaning and answer in their own different ways that question. And I think that the sacred and the secular have been turned into polar opposites, but that's actually not the case. And in fact, they combine in an excellent way. I know Carl and I have collaborated, and certainly your celebration of a holy feast by the Brayford, followed by lunch at the pub, I think was an excellent combination of the two. But in mindfulness and meditation, certainly I ran a meditation group at my own church for 9 years, and then at the university I've done a meditation in conjunction with the Buddhist chaplain, which is done in a way that anyone can join. You don't have to be a religious person to do it. It's very much something secular as well as spiritual. It's down to your intention fundamentally as to how you approach life. If your intention is towards the spiritual, then you'll find the spiritual in things. Mm. And no label will prevent you from finding something spiritual to enjoy in it.
Which is a really interesting point in terms of we find what we seek out to investigate and so on. If we look for negativity, it's something I often use with my students, that if you're associated with people who are constantly bemoaning the state of the world, bemoaning this, moan, they'll get more of what they're moaning about. If they actually start looking at that positive outlook and begin, no matter how difficult it might seem, just take those initial first teeny tiny steps to positivity, that can be a huge relief in terms of accessing that. And if we turn to Nina, is it a similar line with respect to the Hindu religion of faith, that we do need that intangible notion of something that's greater than us that effectively isn't just the offshoot of our neurons and electrochemicals firing off in the mind that kind of gives us this notion of spirituality.
I think it does, yeah. Because a lot of the times I'm being asked a question by the students, they don't got time to pray. They don't have a temple in Lincoln. They don't have a gurdwara in Lincoln. Hmm. Where do they go? They need a place where they can actually, you know, pray and be more closer to God in that sense. They believe there is a God, and there is a creator who's actually responsible for the whole of the universe. But they want this little place where they can actually go and pray to their own God. Hmm. Hindus have thousands and thousands of gods, so... And every student is different from what they believe in. Mm. But finding that way to deal with it is... I run an Aarti group. I run it at the university every Thursday. So I've got a group where I put anyone who's shown any interest. It's not just the Hindus who come to my Aarti group. It's a mixture. I've got Muslims. I've got Sikhs on there. I even had a pagan person. And they tried it. But the fact is, it's wherever you think you can link, you need to belong to something. You need to have that awareness for this, you know. So.
And I mean, Carl, from your own perspective, of course, to quote the late Bill Shankly, football is more important than life or death. Just paraphrasing that side of things there. But the religion of something like that sense of belonging, that sense, I mean, we talk at the University of Lincoln about one community, that there is a shared line in terms of that, that there is strength and diversity that we have in, you know, a range of things within that. Orthodoxy, again, look back over the history of the line. St. Paul, he got on well with certain people, he got on less well with others. But the whole history of St. Paul himself, so when he was Saul, effectively he was one of the Orthodox members who effectively would be persecuting Christians. And then, of course, the Damascus conversion occurred, and so on and so forth. So is it something that you are challenged by, or is it a case of, well, we've always had belief? I mean, in the classic words, we want to believe, help our unbelief.
I love that quote from the Gospels. Thanks, Alex, for mentioning it. For us, we don't tend to, I'm speaking in broad brush terms here, we don't tend to make any divide between sacred and secular. We have a prayer that comes into play in Pentecost, the Pentecost season, which is God who's everywhere present and filling all things. That means there's no such thing as a purely secular thing or a purely sacred thing. Yeah. I like what Helen said about intention, but for me it's not a challenge. What I find is a difficulty is helping my secular or even my atheist colleagues realize and recognize that sometimes they're just as religious as me. Sometimes they're just as ritualistic as me. It's just that they are expressing it in different ways. And that leads to some interesting conversations for sure.
And certainly the notion of humanism and the aspect that comes through from that, I think one can identify in so many ways. The definition of the way they are as human beings might often be better than those people who effectively were supposedly badged as being much more kinder and so on.
Absolutely.
And that kindness is there. Let's move to Louis Armstrong, your only choice of music for reasons. Well, basically, we did offer you the opportunity to actually sing all kinds of everything by Dana, of course, from the Eurovision Song Contest back in the day. But Nini said no. You're going to hold fire on that one, maybe another show. But you have gone for Louis Armstrong and What a Wonderful World. Would you like to explain why you've gone for the man himself?
It's just such a happy song. It sums up everything about life and people's togetherness, people being included, people looking at things in a different way. It's, you know, everything makes me happy. So everything early morning, you wake up, you thank the God for another day. You're doing something religious, makes me happy. I'm feeding the little birds in the garden, makes me happy.
Co-hosting a radio show.
That is a beautiful, beautiful song. So it includes everybody and it's for everyone. So I can't explain what, but it's the first song I ever heard when I came to this country.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying how do you do. They're really saying I love you. I hear babies cry, I watch them grow. They're like much more than I'll ever know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Although, as indeed was pointed out in the introductory chat to this edition of Cultural Connections by Carl, sometimes the irony of that particular track is not lost, whether it's in a motion picture or whether indeed we have a world in which we have persecutions in Nigeria, we have persecutions in China, we have the Ukraine scenario, we have so much. And again, we're not looking for negativity, but so many challenging times where people have their own particular viewpoint, perspective. They're battling over essentially nothing, ultimately. What are your thoughts with respect to that, Carl, from the perspective of people who would say, yeah, what about this, though?
Yeah, well, obviously I've got sympathy and I always want to avoid giving any kind of glib answers when people ask about suffering and the evil that's all around us. But for us, the fact that God came and incarnated and suffered alongside us speaks more, almost more, than anything else that could be said on the matter.
It is that divine paradox, which again we can talk about at length, that you've actually got somebody who effectively is the incarnation of the creator of the universe, effectively humbling right the way from initial starting off point, both in Bethlehem through to obviously crucifixion at the end, for doing something which basically he didn't do in the first place.
Yeah.
Let's turn back to Nina, and let's focus on this notion of the spiritual and the academic. You said, Nina, when you arrived that Subhash was keen to get you on board because, you know, again, from the Hindu religion, there was very little with respect to Lincoln to actually open up from that perspective. Do you feel that that's changing? Do you feel as though sometimes it's tokenism? Do you feel as though it's a case of, well, we're seeing how we're developing here? How is the paradigm developing?
I think there is progress because students actually have a focal point to come to the Aarti every week. And as I'm in Minerva building Wednesdays and Thursdays all day from 9 o'clock, and the number of students who come and touch my feet, because that's the culture we have back home where we do that to our parents. They're going for the exams, they do that to me, and they seek for my blessings. They know they can actually come and talk to me if they have any problem. There's lots of students who are actually fighting with their inner self, because at home they've been following a different religion, but they don't want to follow that because nobody's ever explained why. They're asking questions they can't answer. So to us, as in multi-faith chaplaincy, we cater for everybody, even people who do not believe in any religion. So that's the satisfaction I'm getting, because they have a point of contact, they can come in. And we've got so many chaplains, and if even each one student went to each one of them, there's that 29 odd chaplains there to answer their questions. They're there. We never let people feel they're alone or they're by themselves, they're in a different country. So that faith from within them is what keeps them going. Mm. So now I mean, they all believe there is a God, and they also know that the end of the day, when everything's going jumbling up in their head and they're trying to sleep, at the end, the peace comes from God, and they know that He cares. Some believe it's a woman, so
I was going to say, or she,
goes, or she, well, yeah. It depends on them. But the fact that we are actually doing the weekly aarti, and students are regularly coming, I was quite prepared when I started. It may have one or two, but I've got 29 people literally taking turns to come because it's a small room. So I feel that I've helped people there. I've helped students to belong, to say there is. And it's not just for the Hindu students, it's for everybody. So,
Helen, in terms of the Roman Catholic faith, lots of positives, lots of challenges, lots of negatives. For every Spanish Inquisition, we've got a Hildegard of Bingen, we've got Julian of Norwich, we've got St. Teresa of Avila, we've got a whole range of positive aspects that have come through. We've got very Pope Francis, there's a whole range of things working through that process. Do you feel that, I mean, given the scholarly nature, you go back to St. Augustine and his, classic case in point, his mother Monica wasn't really a big fan of Augustine getting involved with his worldly activities. In fact, he fathered a child, there were all sorts of things going on with that. Do you feel that when it comes to the academic side of things, that we still manage to get those, I hesitate to use the word messages because we're not looking to brand things here. Do you feel as though there is a connection that's being made there within the culture of Christianity from that point of view and the wider audience?
I think so very much. And that's something that we can be more aware of the contribution that faith can make to the academic environment, because ultimately community is part of what the university stands for, and also dialogue and sharing, and things like integrity and respect, collaboration. These are all very much part of the work of academic life and religious culture.
Of course, with Bishop Hugh, of course, we're at the centre of a place that really has a long Christian background from that perspective. There's a writer, Peter Ross, who's just done a text called Steeplechasing, in which he actually doesn't talk about Lincoln, but he actually talks about a whole range of other activities and ways in which we need that, whether it's the monks at Pluscadon Abbey, whether it's St. Paul's Cathedral, whether it's, again, people working through the process. That clearly is an evidence which is within that. We're coming neatly to your next choice of music, Carl, and I'm going to give you a choice here. Do you want to go down the line of Pavarotti or indeed Will Khoury?
Let's go for Pavarotti, please, Alex.
Why is that, then?
This song, Caruso, I'm a sucker for any song with a story, especially when it's a true story, and this song was based upon the artist who originally performed it, stumbling across a once famous opera singer, Caruso.
Enrico Caruso.
Is it Enrico? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. Okay, will I explain it? I
mean, carry on.
Well, he, from what I understand, he'd lived this life of fame and bright lights in America, despite his humble beginnings in Italy, but also, like all of us, had his flaws, so that actually his life was marked with adultery, womanizing.
Just like St. Augustine, basically. Just saying.
Apart from the opera thing.
Yeah, you don't know, Augustine could have carried a pretty tune, basically, when he wasn't.
Yeah,
exactly.
I don't know. But with this particular episode, when the writer stumbles across Caruso in the hotel, it's at the very end of his life, and he's still chasing after women. And
I won't say just like Augustine, because I think he moved on by then, really.
He's done that. Yeah. But there are certain moments and lines in the song which just speak to me about making sure that our lives are lived for what's right and what's good, to the glory of God, and not for meaningless things. You know, even I say meaningless things, everything's got its value in its place, but in particular I found this song very sad, and the narrator, the words of the song don't offer a judgment. That's for the reader and the translator like me, I don't speak Italian, to take away. But in particular, right at the end there, he says, in the end everything gets small, even those bright lights in America. You turn around and see your life, and it's like the white foam of a wave in the wake of a fishing boat. Imagine how small that is. And what did you live it for? For what? Adultery? Did you live it for the pleasures of this life? So I love this song.
I'll just wrap up with the classic Augustine quote, which may be apocryphal. Lord, make me a good man, but not just yet.
Yeah.
guido per il mare luce e tira forte il vento su una vecchia terrazza davanti al golfo di Sorrento. Un uomo abbraccia una ragazza dopo che aveva pianto, poi si schiarisce la voce e ricomincia il canto. Te voglio bene assai, ma tanto tanto bene assai, è una catena ormai che scioglie in sangue tinte e vene. Luci in mezzo al mare, penso alle notti là in America, ma erano solo le lampare e la bianca scia d'un'elica. Sentì il dolore della musica, si alzò dal pianoforte, ma quando vide la luna uscire da una nuvola gli sembrò più dolce anche l'amore. Guardò negli occhi la ragazza, quegli occhi verdi come il mare. Poi all'improvviso uscì una lacrima e lui credette d'affogare. Te voglio bene, ma tanto, tanto bene. Scioglie il sangue di te bene, potenza della lirica, dove ogni dramma è un falso, e con un po' di trucco e con la mimica puoi diventare un altro. Ma due occhi che ti guardano così vicini e feri ti fanno scordare le parole, confondono i pensieri. Così diventa tutto piccolo anche le notti là in America. Ti volti e vedi la tua vita come la scia d'un'elica. Ma sì, è la vita che finisce, ma lui non ci pensò poi tanto, anzi si sentiva già felice e ricominciò il suo canto. Te voglio bene assai, ma tanto, tanto. Scioglie il sangue di te bene, te voglio bene assai, ma tanto, tanto bene assai, è una
powerful stuff as ever by Luciano Pavarotti and Caruso. The fun aspect now, apart from the fact that how often have I obviously had confirmation when I've looked at a group of students' essays work and I've had to say, God help me. That's a marking thing, don't worry, we'll work our way through that. Let's talk about the aspect of Lincoln that our guests have found most unusual or charming or frankly absolutely incomprehensible since they actually arrived at the university. Let's start off with Nina, if we may. Nina, what elements have you, as a lay Hindu chaplain, suddenly encountered and you thought, what on earth are they doing?
To me, Brayford is the most. Because it's so full of life early morning. You've got the swans. They've just had little babies now. Don't know what they're called. I think they're called cygnets.
Cygnets.
I'm not sure.
Named after the PR company.
Okay.
Sorry.
And the students actually sitting there relaxed instead of worrying, rushing around. That's what you see. So that part of me, to me, is brilliant. But putting it into the... This is just the ordinary morning for me when I come in. Yeah. But the most beautiful building in Lincoln is the cathedral. Mm. I'm a Hindu chaplain. I find peace there when I go. Mm. I just go and sit in a service at the back and I listen. Mm. And I've encouraged all students to go there. And I see lots of them there when I'm there. I was there on Sunday. And there were so many of them, you know. So, and they're multi-faith. They're not all, you know, we actually believe in a church. But then Nigerian students, loads of them, and I love them to bits because they've got their own churches as well. But because they know I've sold this Lincoln thing to, in the cathedral thing, to so many, there's the castle there. I don't talk about that much, but it's the cathedral. Mm. I think everyone who comes to Lincoln should go there. It's a beautiful place.
We talk about, of course, the spires and the steeples of cathedrals, and spire literally means to breathe. When we inspire, we breathe in, and then we expire, we breathe out. And obviously all of those issues come to mind. Helen, we just realised, of course, you're also national coordinator for the Catholic chaplaincy, so it's for the unit for higher education. So it's quite a broad range you have, in addition to obviously what you do assistant lay Catholic chaplain at the University of Lincoln. Any periods which you thought, well, how peculiar or how strange that particularly was? Or is it just a case rather like Nina where you thought, actually, the swans and that small little sliver of the year where students can actually relax because they've not got exams or stresses or strains, etc. That's a good point. Or is it the cathedral?
I think that whatever time of year it is, Lincoln is a place where you can find refreshment and peace in the green spaces. It's a fantastic place just to go out. And a particular place I want to mention, which I think is quite magical, is Licorice Park. It's close to the West End and it's a tiny patch of land which was formed out of former allotments. And it's a really beautiful place to go and have a quiet moment. You often see people sitting there just on their own, taking time and having a breather. And at this time of year, this is a really important thing for everyone to be doing.
Carl.
I thought about answering in some ways in my other capacity here. I'm a teacher at the International College and I get to meet so many different people nearly every day, but actually beyond that, I'm originally from the Black Country. You probably can't tell anymore from my accent because I lived abroad for so long, and we pride ourselves on being friendly people and being down to earth and approachable. But when I moved to Lincoln, I noticed immediately, I think maybe this place is more friendly even than Walsall, where I'm from.
And it was friendlier than Walsall. I'm amazed we don't actually have that in our university manifesto, really. We're friendlier than Walsall.
It's better than Walsall.
Yeah.
No, I don't think that you should ever go for that as a slogan. It was confirmed to me in my first winter here. I've been here 4 years now. When a very little old lady stopped me when I was cycling down the path, and she said to me in a lovely Lincoln accent, "Just be careful, Duck. It's really icy. You can't see it, but there's black ice, and I'm worried that you're going to come off your bike." I said thanks, and she was right. It was really slippy. But I stopped a while afterwards and watched her, and she was just waiting around, stopping all the cyclists. It was like she thought, you know what? Someone needs to be here to warn these people about the ice. And I thought, this is a friendly place.
Wonderful.
I like it.
It brings us neatly round to your next choice, Helen, your final choice today. Of course, it's Vaughan Williams and the Lark Ascending. So speaking of the spiritual, any thoughts for this one?
you can hear larks ascending on the West Common, and it's a way of connecting with nature. I think we all need to do that. It can just take us out of ourselves into another place, away from our kind of mental running about, and just to be there and breathe is a great thing to do.
One appreciates it may be sacrilegious to talk over Vaughan Williams. We'll leave him in there as a background because we're at the final stage of the programme where we're going to invite all three of our guests today in Cultural Connections to share a spiritually uplifting few words. So Nina, we'll come to you first as lay Hindu chaplain. What would you like to close the programme with?
When I speak to the students here, I just say to them, any little problems you have, treat them as small challenges. And like we get rid of all the challenges at the end, and you really want to, you know, fight and get to the end of that challenge, do the same with life. Live each day to its fullest. Be happy.
Helen.
My suggestion is that you reach out and connect with someone every day, and don't ever just spend a day shut in your room on your own.
And Carl.
I'd like to say that we all worship lots of different things and put things into priority and hierarchy in our life. I encourage my listeners that the Holy Trinity alone is worthy of all of our worship.
Carl Christopher, Nina Chapman and Helen Townsend, huge thanks for being part of the season finale for the academic year, at least, of Cultural Connections. We will be back, of course, in the very near future. And Carl, you have the honour of the final choice, the final piece of music today.
Thank you. I've chosen a duet by the Lebanese singers Walik Fouri and Nawala Zoghbi. I spent around the best part of 10 years at least in the Middle East, and this song captures for me so much of the joy and vitality of the culture. I hope your listeners turn up and dance their socks off. I won't, don't worry. But the song's called Min Habibi Ana, Who's My Beloved, and it's just a raucous celebration of love.
دلي علي اللي مشاويني الله الزمان سبقنا وهرباني أحلامه والعمر لو ما عشقنا شو نفع أيامه عشقنا شو نفع ايامه من شو بعد مخجولي